This is the Tribe Tech Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tribe Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Fayaza Khan, and with me today is Robert Hillier. Today we've decided to suspend our original plans for the podcast. We were going to talk about whether technology is moving too fast for legislation to keep up. But in light of what we've all been going through with coronavirus, we've decided to focus instead on the subject that we're all talking about. This is especially because many of our listeners are SMEs with tech products, and the advice of the last few days promoting working from home and self-isolating has seen many people very concerned. We have with us Ben Travers from Stephen Scone, who are also supporting this podcast. Ben is an expert in all things legal and all things tech. Ben, you've seen and heard from a lot of concerned people in the last few days. Can you tell us more about that?
So I think as in any time when situations change unexpectedly, we become very busy doing things that we hadn't necessarily expected to come our way. Some of that is immediately obvious as a result of what's happening with the coronavirus at the moment. So advice on online platforms who are maybe having to offer refunds for services that have previously been booked and things like that. But also beneath the surface, there's a lot going on that's perhaps a little less obvious. So one trend that we've noticed is that there's been a sudden increased appetite for engaging with digital solutions to what otherwise would have been real-world situations. So that might be as simple as converting a traditional training module, into something that's delivered digitally. It might be issues around communicating for groups that normally work together in an office environment that are suddenly working from home and need to document share and all of those sorts of things. Over the years, we've seen a lot of reluctance in lots of industries to adopt that technology. And some of that reluctance has been sort of a fear of tech. Some of it has been a fear of what it will do to working practices or the quality of work that will be produced as a result. And all of that seems to have disappeared pretty much overnight, that fear, as the need to make sure that businesses survive overtakes that and people just get on and do stuff. So for the businesses that we're working with that are providing those sorts of platforms, they're suddenly seeing a massive uptake in inquiries.
Digital. So you're saying that basically the coronavirus has actually helped people to move digitally to continue with their business?
Or it's been the spur and the catalyst for that, maybe that acceleration.
Absolutely. Certainly we're seeing an acceleration, and it's early days, but looking at digital solutions is a relatively easy or obvious solution to some of the issues that people are facing with social isolation in the business world as well.
Doesn't help restaurants or cafes or
it doesn't
theatres or
it doesn't.
But then there's Deliveroo and Uber Eats and that sort of thing, which can take over, can't they?
Absolutely, in our world, a lot of the work that we're being asked to do in that area is more to do with the laws around consumer protection for online bookings and things like that, reputation management for those businesses where you have disgruntled consumers using the social media platforms as an outlet for disgruntlement, often unfairly aimed at the businesses. It's not their fault they're having to cancel things, but also you can imagine people get emotive about certain things being cancelled. I think we're also seeing, though, that as part of that acceleration, businesses are understandably in sort of survival mode in a lot of cases, so they're just taking the steps that they can do to make sure they can carry on providing things to their clients. But in doing that, they're often causing problems for later, and that's something that we're working quite hard at the moment to try and spread the message to businesses about, not to try and hamper what they're doing, but just to make sure that they're taking these steps in a rational fashion and thinking not just about what happens today, tomorrow, the next week, but what happens in the next quarter, in the next financial year and so on as well, and making sure that the actions they take now aren't going to have negative consequences for the long-term health of the business.
What are those actions then? What do you...
So there's a couple of things, I think, that we're seeing, a couple of trends again. So one is around something as simple as working from home. We're seeing a lot of people asking their workforces to work from home for completely understandable reasons, but not necessarily putting in place the protections that you would expect from a security point of view, from a GDPR point of view. The IT platforms they're using might be sharing data with territories outside the EEA, for example. They might make it difficult for them to control data. We're seeing people putting first and foremost the ability to continue to communicate, to continue to share documents, to continue to work with their teams. Thoughts about cybersecurity and GDPR and privacy and their compliance with that element of the legislative framework are perhaps at the back of their minds at the moment. But we are seeing, anecdotally, I don't have any figures on this, but we are seeing an increase in cyber attacks. Partly you could say that's linked to people working from home where they haven't necessarily got the same securities around their systems.
Sorry, we're seeing an increase in cyber attacks since coronavirus became rampant.
I haven't got any figures on it, but I'm hearing more stories of people explaining that they've been the victim of phishing attacks, for example, increasingly based on since they've been working remotely. And part of that may be because people are using platforms where their data is no longer secure. Mm-hmm. So email addresses, documents and things like that are getting into environments that they wouldn't necessarily otherwise get to. As
right.
I say, I don't have any figures on it.
I've also heard anecdotally as well that that there has been an increase in particularly denial of service attacks because people's guard may be down while they deal with this. And also I heard that even Slack and Google Chat was struggling because of the volumes all of a sudden of people wanting to use those platforms and some of the dangers that might confront with people.
I've not heard that, but it would make sense if people are using services more, that there's going to be more demand on those and that could affect bandwidth for people trying to access those services, absolutely. And then, of course, that has a knock-on effect on businesses' ability to service their clients going forward. But looking at the cybersecurity piece and the GDPR piece, taking those steps now and putting those issues to one side makes sense from a business point of view, trying to survive and carry on working today, tomorrow and the next day, but is potentially storing up issues in the future if that data gets out there. Their obligations to make sure that they're looking after customer data aren't going away.
Is there a situation could that ever be used as a defence that because we were instructed to work from home, therefore for a few days, We dropped the ball on a couple of things. Could that ever be used in defence if there was, say, a minor breach rather than something?
I think the regulators are always looking at matters in a reasonable fashion, and very often the way in which they will respond to a breach of some sort is dependent upon the level of severity with which the business treated the issue both before and after the breach. So they're not in the business of shutting businesses down with draconian penalties, but they are trying to make sure that businesses understand their obligations, take them seriously and learn from mistakes and so on. The position at the moment is very much that there is a very clear piece of legislation on working from home and the levels of security that businesses are expected to put into place, regardless of whether somebody's working from an office or from their home office. And if businesses haven't followed those steps, then they're already going to be in trouble. So the businesses that have followed those procedures up to this point should be okay. They then need to hold their nerve and carry on following those procedures as they implement these new moves in these times of change. And as long as they do that, they should be okay.
There's some businesses, though, who have put those things in place and would like their workforce to work from home, but they're unable to because the IT departments of certain organizations say, we can't have these people work from home because they'll crash our systems. So then those people have to go in to work, or if they go work from home, they'll crash the systems. Or the other option is to use Google Mail rather than the whole. So where's the solution? Like, where's the middle ground here?
I think the solution is to not be afraid of using third-party providers, but to make sure that the third-party providers you're using are A, going to be compliant, and B, you're making sure that your setup enables you to use those. So by that I mean, for example, you've notified people whose data you're dealing with that the information is going to be used with these third parties in this way. So having an audit process before you ship data to a third party, making sure that that's in compliance with the procedures that you've already put in place, the policies and the notices you've sent to customers. And if you need to update customers before you make those steps, then building that into your timeline as well.
So I suppose sending encrypted messages and that sort of thing might help.
Yeah, that might well be part of it. So taking reasonable precautions to make sure that those things happen. Other issues arise, again, from a less technical point of view, but a human error point of view, where people are using their own devices. And lots of people won't realise that once they sync their device with certain online providers, all that data is then in the cloud, wherever it may be. And whilst they may be able to close those online accounts later, there are many of those providers where they won't be able to delete that data later. despite the GDPR obligations about right to deletion. So creating potentially long-term
issues. That?
So it depends on a number of the platforms where you're sharing data with third parties. If you look at their terms and conditions, quite often, particularly for the free platforms, the data is what's of value to that business. So it depends on which platforms they are, which countries they're in, and which set of terms and conditions that you've signed up for. But any free service provider that's taking data, you always have to ask, why are they taking the data?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the money in it for them? Might be advertising revenue, it might be the data.
Because this has happened so quickly,
yeah,
and an awful lot of small businesses, this has not had to have been an issue for them at all. And almost overnight, they're expected to change the whole business practice and way of working. What do you think are the key things then that you do need to look out for and check, so that at least you know when this is all passed, everything's going to be okay for you and your company?
Absolutely. So from a privacy point of view, a data protection point of view, conducting a privacy impact assessment, it has got to be step one. So you've made a decision about which third-party providers you want to use or what plan you want to implement, say, for example, working from home, then you conduct a privacy impact assessment, which is designed to demonstrate that you have thought through the risks to data subjects of the steps that you're taking. And once you've done your privacy impact assessment, provided you've done the foundation stuff towards compliance as well, you should then be in a position to make a reasonable decision as to whether or not what you're about to do is compliant and within the scope of what your agreements with your data subjects covers. That will go a long way to showing that you've thought about the process and you've made some reasonable decisions. If you conduct the privacy impact assessment and you make an unreasonable decision, then it's not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's unusual for a business to do that. So I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing would be to just make sure that you're cautious and you're looking at the terms and conditions on which you enter into any agreements with third-party providers. Have a look what they're going to do with the data, wherever they're going to store it. Think back to the conversations you've had with your data subjects. Would they expect you to share their data with these organisations? Is that within the remit of the terms when they gave you their data in the first place? That's going to be really important. We're still in an environment where human error accounts for a huge percentage of cyber breaches. So I think, again, training and reinforcing the message is something really important for people that are going to be working from home. People that are working from home, perhaps they're used to working in an office environment where they can bounce ideas off colleagues and things like that. And if something came in on the email that looked a bit suspicious, they might talk to their neighbour about it. Encouraging that sort of communication, not a technological solution, but encouraging that communication is still going to be really, really useful. And remembering also that for people who are not used to working at home, being asked to work from home is probably going to increase their stress levels and mean that they're not necessarily going to be making the most rational decisions. So if you're looking at vulnerability to phishing or whaling attacks, then again, training for those people who suddenly find themselves in that new environment would not go amiss.
Online training.
Yes, which is another issue that we're seeing at the moment, actually, from platforms where, aside from data protection and GDPR, but another thing that links into the increased appetite for digital solutions is people that are perhaps used to providing services in a real-world setting, say, for example, personal trainers, will look at providing content online to try and make sure, again, that the wheels stay on and the business keeps running. Absolutely, perfectly understandable, but again, taking a deep breath and a step back and just thinking about whether or not what they're doing now, yes, it might work for the next 2, 3, 4 days or weeks, whatever it might be, but will it have negative impacts on the business in 6 or 12 months? And I'm thinking, for example, of people that might have spent the last 5 or 10 years creating their courses, creating their content, creating what they're known for, and then upload it to platforms with licensing provisions, which mean that they're giving their copyright content away.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that they've got no recourse then when other people start using it later.
It, yeah.
So again, a really simple thing to fix, but just a case of being in the right mindset and thinking, okay, well, I need to do this quickly, but I also need to do it properly and make sure that I'm thinking about not just the next week, but
the future.
The future.
Yeah. I think you might even need a lawyer, possibly. Some of these. just a final question for me. You may have one.
No, I'm good.
Can you see any long-term beneficial behaviour change that might come out of this? I know it's early to think, it feels strange almost asking that now, but it will end. Can you see adaptations that are being made now that actually we'll look back on and say, well, that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't have had to have gone through this process?
Absolutely, and I think people will be perhaps pleasantly surprised at the amount of work that can be done without quite so much travel, for example. Mm. So we do quite a bit of overseas work and work with companies all over the place. That work still continues, and yes, there's a need for face-to-face contact. That has a different dynamic to it, but this increased appetite to embrace those digital technologies, particularly over communications, can add some real efficiencies, absolutely. So I think I said earlier that a general reluctance that had been put in place against these digital platforms has suddenly gone overnight when push comes to shove.
Mm.
And it'll be interesting to see when normality returns, whether or not that was a blip, or whether people say, actually, there were some real advantages, we should have been less afraid of the tech in the first place. It's then on the tech businesses to earn that trust. And a lot of what's going on around GDPR and cybersecurity and so on is about trying to give businesses the ability to gain the trust of their consumers. And those businesses that do the right thing, act ethically, don't take advantage of the situation, but also build that trust by saying to the customers, we're actually going to look after the data, we're going to look after you, have a possibility to really thrive.
Last month, we did a podcast about health and well-being, and we talked about how some companies were reluctant to allow people to work from home just because they felt like you need to do a 9-to-5 day, and they didn't understand the benefits of home working and health and well-being, and they promoted health and well-being and they were happy to do that, but they didn't want their workforce.
When push came to shove, we want you in here for 10 hours. She feels like a different world now.
Now I kind of wonder, like, post-virus, maybe that is one benefit that's going to come out of it, because people will see, well, you know, yes, we went into a little bit of a recession, and yes, things were a little bit terrible, but not as bad as we thought, considering everybody was working from home.
Yeah.
I suppose that if your business has done okay, then you will have to make a case as for why you need everybody hoiking themselves in every single day.
Clogging up the roads,
20, 30,
clogging
40
up the
miles
trains.
Away again.
Yeah. And certainly in our world, as a legal firm, there has been a lot of discussion in the industry about people working in teams, working remotely, the traditional office environment and how appropriate that is. And I think that professional services generally, where there's very little barrier to people working from home, will see a change through necessity.
Thanks, Ben. That was extremely informative, and I hope our listeners are able to take something from everything that you've said. And thank you for listening to this Tech Southwest podcast, Tribe Tech. Get in touch with us on Twitter if you have any questions, or if you'd like to share how your business is coping through this global pandemic. I think something we should definitely remember also, if I'm allowed to reflect a bit, is self-isolating doesn't mean isolation. We should definitely still keep in touch with the people that we love and care about, and we could still use the phone, we could create virtual hangouts, even sharing the love on social media. I love that Chris Martin from Coldplay has been hosting a virtual music concert from his kitchen. I mean, it'll be better for all of our mental health if we can still stay in contact, even if we're not in touch, if that makes sense. That's all from me, Fayaz Khan, and my co-host, Robert Hillier. For now, stay safe.
A Tech Southwest podcast. In collaboration with Stephen Scone.